Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, joined now by Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest, as he has had a lot of fun things to cover the last few years, certainly as the Chiefs win their second Super Bowl in three tries, their second Super Bowl in the last 4 years, and Matthew is with us, and I was joking with Matt off the air before we started here that, have you come down from cloud nine yet from the Chiefs winning a Super Bowl? And Matt tells me, yeah, I came down real quick with a cold. Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, Matt. I hope you're doing better, and that while you were down with the cold that you felt maybe just slightly better because the Chiefs won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, luckily, I guess with the cold, I was just watching from home on the parade, so that was a good way to catch the parade without having to be out in the weather and probably feeling worse afterwards. But no, it's been a blast. I mean, you can't. It's a rare experience in this line of work to be able to get to do this, and you know, to have two Super Bowls now in the last five seasons, it's been remarkable. You know, opportunity to cover this team.
It's insane. Let's go to the Super Bowl 57 for a moment, look back at it. Of course, a lot of the narrative was, how are the Chiefs going to defend that pass rush? How are they going to protect Patrick Mahomes, who maybe is not 100% with a high ankle sprain? Eagles came in 77 sacks on the season. And one of the things we kept trying to say is that the Eagles hadn't played great quarterbacks all year long. Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, the two best quarterbacks they played. Prescott put 40 on them the second time they played. Prescott didn't play the first time. And then Rodgers and the Packers scored 33. And the Chiefs offensive line, I think they, much like the Niner game, much like the Buccaneer game, where everybody was talking and hearing things from the other side about how their line isn't that great or how this team is going to do this to the Chiefs offensive line. It seems like the Chiefs offensive line, when they have a chip on their shoulder, man, it makes them play even better.
Yeah, and there was a chip on these guys' shoulders for a lot of different reasons, a lot of different motivations. You know, it varied from individual, but they all heard the talk. I mean, there was absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, and they felt disrespected. They felt overlooked. And this is a line that, I mean, you can't do that to. I mean, if you give them some motivation, I mean, that's all that they need. They've got some nasty tempers on that offensive line. Great dudes off the field, but when you put them in between the sidelines, within those white stripes, I mean, they're nasty guys, and they showed that. I mean, and I'm with you. I wasn't sure exactly, you know, what the Eagles were. You know, they certainly seemed a little bit of their success had been schedule-driven, and it had been a long time since they had seen a quarterback, you know, even close to the level of Patrick Mahomes, and I was just curious about how that was going to work. And not only that, Andy Reid, the coaching staff, came up with a great game plan to help those guys out up front as far as just slowing down those edge rushers, giving them a lot of eye candy to watch and to worry about, you know, concerned about the speed on the outside and stretching the field. So, you know, to me, it was a perfect blend of the game plan executed extremely well by a group of motivated offensive linemen that really got that job done.
Didn't allow a sack. Pretty impressive stuff. You mentioned Andy's game plan. You know, the second half, and there's some people that have said, well, Mahomes got MVP, but he only threw for 182 yards. Listen, he's efficient, 21 to 27. The Chiefs are balanced. They ran the ball well, too, which was terrific to see. I will say this in defense of people that may be saying that, and I'm not saying Mahomes shouldn't have been MVP. I think you could make a great case Jalen Hurts could be MVP statistically, and they're apparently you have to be on the winning team to win MVP. But the wide receivers and the tight ends, I mean, the guys that Mahomes threw to in the second half, Matt, were just absolutely so wide open. I mean, it has to be scheme, right? I mean, Moore and Tony wide open, Kelsey's wide open, Juju was wide open. I remember the fake pass left to Tony and a little wheel route there, not necessarily a wheel route, but it kind of looked like it, with Juju going up the far sideline for a catch on a key play. It just seemed like whatever Andy Reid drew up, there was really – Mahomes was in no danger of turning the ball over passing the football.
Yeah, and you know, and I've said before, my comparison with you know, Andy Reid and an offense is that it's really a symphony. I mean, and what he does is he creates themes and he builds upon them, and he will show you something and then recall back to it later. And this is a perfect example of that. I mean, you know, they hadn't run one of those what they call the corn dog routes that they scored the touchdowns on with Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore. They hadn't run one of those since week one. But, you know, and it's also a testament to the way this coaching staff as a whole prepares and why we circle back once again to why is Andy Reid so good after bye weeks with an extra week to prepare, because you give him that time and you give this coaching staff that time to do their homework, they're going to out-research you. They're going to figure out your weaknesses, and they're going to figure out how to defeat that. And so much of this game plan was just, I mean, all about exploiting what the Eagles did well, what they didn't do well, how you could, you know, create those matchups. And one of the things, obviously, that they saw was that, you know, when the Eagles were passing off guys in their man coverage, they had some weak points. They had some spots and some gaps in that coverage. And they just absolutely exploited them incredibly. That's what happens when you give coaches the caliber that the Chiefs have on the offensive side an extra week to prepare. They're going to find things like that. And in the midst of the season, you know, when you're just going from game to game and you're in the grind, that's more difficult to do. But when you give this coaching staff time, they're going to figure things out. And I mean, I feel like that Andy Reid's play call sheet and the Chiefs play call sheet from that game belongs in the Hall of Fame. There was almost nothing that didn't work. And it was just the sequence of it, you know, even to the point of Kadarius Toney plays one play in the first half. And yet he becomes a key component in the second half with what they called out of him. So to me, yeah, a large part of this, you know, the success of this game and winning this championship absolutely belongs to the coaching staff, and not just Andy Reid, but his entire offensive coaching staff.
Absolutely, and they're so good that even when they line up in the wrong formation, they still scored a touchdown and Sky Moore was open by 10 yards.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they still can't figure out who was lined up in the wrong place.
Oh, they know, they know, they know, they know. You and I both know they know.
We know. And that's the crazy thing. And Andy Reid knew it, and he was trying to call timeout, and Patrick was like, "Yeah, no, we can make this work."
You just sit here and you go, "What happens if Andy does call that timeout in time? You know, do they convert that? Because if they don't, they kick a field goal probably from the 5, and it's 31-27. It's a whole different game. That was a huge play in the game. I want to talk about two coaches that were under fire at times this year, certainly from the fan base. Of course, every coach is. But Steve Spagnuolo, defensive coordinator for the Chiefs, and Dave Tobe, special teams coach for the Chiefs. I think there a lot of people worry about special teams. You and I talked about the troubles on special teams, and it was happening late in the season. And you're kind of getting to the point like, if they haven't figured it out by now, are they going to figure it out? That was kind of my thinking. Yeah, defensively, I wasn't as worried about the defense as much as special teams because, you know, I've seen Spags win a couple of Super Bowls and win one against maybe the best offense of all time, an 18-0 Patriot team with Tom Brady, and held them to 14 points. But what about those two had to feel a little vindicated, didn't they? Because they did catch some heat, in particular special teams and Dave Tobe. You get the big punt return from Tony. Butker came through with field goals in the last couple games. Granted, he missed a 42-yarder in the Super Bowl, but hit the game winner against the Bengals and, of course, against the Eagles in the Super Bowl. I mean, the special teams was pretty solid for the most part in the playoffs. And then Dave Tobe and his defense, we know the game play they had against the Bengals and then against the Eagles. Yes, the Eagles made plays, but the Chiefs also got a defensive touchdown, and the Chiefs got a couple of key stops in the second half against one of the most explosive offenses in football. What about the vindication for those two guys?
Yeah, it really was. And I think especially so for Dave Tobe, because that guy probably had the roughest year of his career. And, you know, and why? I mean, what was the reasoning for it? Well, I mean, a big part of it was just how many new faces he had. You know, remember, the Chiefs lost 4 or 5 veterans from their special teams units from the past years in the offseason when, you know, there's this older guys that you let go and, you know, and you had to replace them. We wanted to get younger and faster on defense. And part of that transition was meant that you were going to get a lot younger on special teams. So he had 5 or 6 rookies starting on most of his special teams units. Even the other 5 or 6 spots on those teams, a lot of them were being filled in by newcomers, you know, some free agents that they brought in. So there wasn't a lot of continuity on that team at all. And then you throw in that you're trying to get a rookie in Sky Moore, you know, prepped up to be the punt returner. You got a rookie kick returner tonight, that's Isaiah Pacheco. There was just a lot of youth and a lot of inexperience and no chemistry whatsoever. And it really, I think it absolutely took longer than Dave Tobe thought for them to get there. But once you started to get to the part in December where the cliche of these guys aren't rookies anymore started to kick in, you started to see, you know, a little bit come together. And I didn't think that special teams were going to be a problem during the Super Bowl. For that reason, they weren't. I think, once again, you know, you factor in the time, you know, the extra week that Dave Tobe's got to prepare those guys certainly helped. Being able to plug in a guy like Kadarius Toney on the punt return absolutely helped. And this was a bit of a lost season for Harrison Butker with the injury. I'm really intrigued to see what happens next year. I think, you know, that this was definitely a vindication for Dave Tobe. And on the defensive side, yeah, I mean, these are the moments that Steve Spagnuolo lives for. I mean, the guy just does nothing but, you know, win Super Bowl rings, apparently. He's a big game coordinator. There's no doubt about it. And I say that, you know, even though they do give up 35 points, that's no shame with the way that the Eagles played. I mean, Jalen Hurts played, I think, the game of his life. He had some absolutely incredible performances from his supporting cast, pass catchers. That was as well as I think that the Eagles could play. And when you factor in, too, once again, how many young guys that Steve Spagnuolo was counting on and trying to round into shape. And, you know, to me, I mean, that's, I think, another vindication of just how much he was able to get out of this team this year with so many new faces.
And you're not defending three downs. The Eagles go for it on fourth and short as well as anybody in the league, so that makes it tougher on a defense. It's going to be harder for you to get off the field. If it's fourth and short, the offense usually has an advantage and probably should convert 70-80% of those fourth and shorts. And, of course, the Eagles are almost unstoppable with that quarterback sneak when Hurts gets shoved forward. So that makes the defense stay on the field even longer because they're defending one extra down compared to a lot of defenses. So I'm with you on all of that. Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest, is with us covering the Chiefs and did a wonderful job again this year. Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. You and I talked about this. This was the whole talk, and it is funny how you know, Chiefs fans do say that, you know, and I get it. I agree that the Chiefs were overlooked at times. They were disrespected at times. Were they picked to be awful? Not by too many people in regards to being awful, but there were people that said the Chiefs are going to finish fourth, last in the division. There were people that said the Chiefs were going to have a losing record, but there were a lot of people that picked the Bills to win the Super Bowl. I think there were a lot of people that may have picked the Chiefs to win the division, but they were picking the Bills. The Bills, the Bills, the Bills, the Bills. It was all about the Bills. And so then when the Chiefs say that they were disrespected or they use it in a post-game interview, there are people nationally saying, well, what's he talking about? Well, we're talking about you. Because some of those same people said all of these things because one guy left the team. One guy, Tyreek Hill. That's what everybody got fixated on. And you and I remember we talked about it after the Hill trade, that this actually could be a blessing in disguise. It could make Mahomes a better quarterback as long as they make the right moves in regards to the draft, get maybe a couple of free agent pickups to help at wide receiver, which they did with Juju and MBS, and even Justin Watson had some contributions at times, is that this team's going to look different. It might be not as sexy offensively, but they might have to win games 27-24 instead of 38-35. Now, ironically, they won 38-35 in the Super Bowl, as we know. But what about the Hill trade? Because I was one that was all for it. I think you understood the bigger picture of it because, to me, it automatically widened the window for the Chiefs to win Super Bowls. And here we are, year one of this retooling, and they already won a Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, you know, and you say blessing in disguise, and, you know, and maybe it really was because, you know, the one thing that usually, the one bad mistake the teams usually can make is they just give that one extra contract or the one too big contract to a player. And no doubt, I mean, hey, Tyreek earned his money this year. I mean, he did everything that the Dolphins expected from him, and he probably would have done that in Kansas City as well. But, you know, the Chiefs were left with zero options. I mean, you know, Tyreek kind of painted him in the corner as far as the contract goes, and they really didn't have an ability to keep him, and their hand was forced. And credit to Brett Veach for honestly getting as good of a deal as he could for Tyreek and in the exchange and with the draft picks that he got back, because he really didn't have much of an option. And honestly, he didn't really have much of an option about where Tyreek went. Tyreek wanted to go to Miami. So you factor all that in, you know, and one, I think Brett Veach deserves a tremendous amount of credit for, you know, not only engineering that deal, but then also, you know, what you said as far as, you know, stacking that receiver room, rebuilding it, bringing in the pieces that they needed. But you're absolutely right in the other part of it, which was that, you know, this was going to be a time for Mahomes to take the next step in maturing as a quarterback. And he'll tell you, he's still growing. He's not a finished product yet. He's still improving, which is a crazy thing and a scary thing for the rest of the league. But this is the next step that he had to take, which was that he had to have a more faith in the guys around him. And certainly, you know, his decision and Andy Reid's decision to, you know, let the team work virtually during the off-season program back in April so that Mahomes could take all these new faces and go down to Texas and work on their own, that wasn't something that they could do legally under the rules for off-season workouts. You know, if they're back in Kansas City during that period, they can't do anything on the field. You know, they're going out to a high school field and working on their own, if that. Reed made a decision to say, you know what, we'll do this part of the – we'll meet virtually. You guys, if you want to go to Texas with Pat, work down there in a good facility and everything, go do that. And I think that paid off in huge spades. I mean, because this – we saw in the last couple of years that when times were tough, Mahomes went one of two places. It was, the ball was either going to Kelce or Hill. This year he didn't have that luxury. I mean, he has Kelce, but he didn't have that number two guy. So, you know, he had to spread the football around more. And I, one of the comparisons I've made in the last few seasons for the Chiefs is that when they eat their vegetables, which is just taking what's given,
yes,
not trying to push the ball too much, they do that, they are unbeatable.
Yep.
And I think you saw an example of that this year, that if when Mahomes, we love the downfield push, we love the deep balls, it's so cool to see, he can make incredible plays, but when they just take what defense is giving him, nobody in this league has figured out how to stop them.
I agree with you 1,000%, and if the Chiefs would have done that a year ago in the AFC title game when they're up 21-10, they would have been in the Super Bowl last year as well. Now, don't know if that would have spurred them on to be in the Super Bowl this year. Who knows? But I'm with you, and, you know, I don't think Brett Veach gets enough credit nationally. I know he started to get some a little bit the second week of the Super Bowl when you run out of stories to cover. But I think Brett Veach, what he did, you trade a star receiver, that is not a popular thing. He had to get Mahomes and Kelce and everybody to buy into the plan, and they did. And then you trade up to get a starting corner, Trent McDuffie, who played great when he was healthy. You get Sky Moore, who paid dividends in the playoff season, and he has, it seems, to have a lot of potential and upside in the future in the second round. You get tall corners. You get a seventh-round running back that's the fastest running back in the draft, and how the guy slides to the Chiefs in the seventh round, I'll never understand. And they still got picks from the Tyreek Hill trade they can use this year in the offseason. And the thing that people tend to overlook, I know you and I don't, is all the cap flexibility that gave the Chiefs financially to go get guys and get more quantity instead of the quality in regards to four or five guys to fill, you know, like we talked about, the receiver room. You filled it up with Juju, MVS, Watson, and you can pay those guys combined less than you did at Tyreek Hill and maybe get similar production. I just thought it was genius. And then going younger at safety and, you know, going to Justin Reed, 7 years younger than Tyrann Mathieu. Perfect, great move. You let Charvarius Ward walk and you trust your draft process and you draft rookies that came through big down the stretch. I mean, it almost feels like Brett Veach was the Dayton Moore of 2014 with the Royals. Everything he touched turned to gold. The only difference is Dayton Moore did it with some older guys that were trying to prove themselves, like Edison Volquez, a Chris Young, and it worked out. The difference to me is Brett Veach did it with young people, young players that should only get better and gives you flexibility on rookie contracts to meet other needs.
Yeah, and to me, the one thing that I've noticed, and I think it pretty much stands out, is just that, you know, Brett Veach is learning on the job, and he's maturing. I think he would even admit, you know, hey, his first draft was not a great draft, and they struggled a little bit early. And some of that was certainly, you know, the Mahomes trade meant they didn't have a first-round pick, so, you know, maybe they had to reach a little bit at some points, and they had to kind of restock the pick process. You know, he made some trades even that, you know, put him in that spot too. And even though I think they were good trades, it meant that they didn't have a lot of draft currency. Now you look at this and one, you know, Veach and his staff are coming up two incredibly successful drafts. They've just been on point the last couple of seasons with finding the right players that fit what they do. Good character guys for the most part that haven't had any issues. And that really fit in with their culture. I mean, that can't be understated, just how important that is. And then the other part of it is, you know, yeah, I mean, they're not making a lot of mistakes. I mean, they made the right moves in free agency. They've been making the right trades. And, you know, and that's not just one guy. I mean, Brett Veach's got an incredible staff. It's been, they've been together for a long time now. I've been really surprised that this group hasn't been picked apart because I think Mike Borgonzi, remember, was – you know, he and Brett Veach shared the same title, and they were both in serious consideration to be the GM of this team. And I'm surprised that Mike Borgonzi hasn't gotten a GM job. Tim Terry is going to be in that conversation. There's going to be some others of these young guys that, I mean, I think there's probably three or four future NFL GMs on this staff right now. And this tells you about, you know, how deep this group is. But they're on fire right now. I mean, they're doing a really good job. I'm really intrigued to see what happens because once again, you know, you take a look at the job that Brett Veach has done as far as stockpiling talent. They're going into this draft with 12 draft picks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an incredible resource to have. I mean, when you've got a Super Bowl championship team.
Yeah, no question about that. Off-season moves are already started. Eric Bieniemy will no longer be the OC of the Chiefs. He's going to the Commanders on a two-year deal. He'll be in charge of all of the offense there with Washington. I'm interested to get your take on this whole situation because I think it's people nationally are missing the boat completely on this story, and I may be dead wrong, but when Matt Nagy came in, to me, the writing's on the wall. Matt Nagy's not taking a quarterback job when he was a head coach of the Bears, if not knowing he's going to move up to be OC. It seemed like the guy in waiting was there. And then our sports director said this the other day on the show, he says, you know, if the Brian Flores situation doesn't pop up when it did, maybe Bieniemy is not with the Chiefs last year and Matt Nagy is your offensive coordinator. The other thing that doesn't make sense to me, and this is why I read between the tea leaves a little bit, is Eric Bieniemy obviously not a head coaching candidate for some reason this year, but he's going to go to be offensive coordinator somewhere else. And people say he's got to get out of Andy Reid's shadow, this and that. Well, Doug Peterson didn't have to. You know, Matt Nagy didn't have to. And at the same time, if you've won two Super Bowls the last 4 years and you've had the best offense back-to-back years with and without Tyreek Hill, and your offensive coordinator typically, one, another team's going to poach him and take him and be the head coach, or two, if he doesn't have that opportunity, the organization that has him as OC is going to quickly want to make sure he's signed for 2 or 3 years, right? And yet last year, it was a one-year deal coming to this year, and he basically is allowed to be a free agent. What about that dynamic of the Chiefs letting Eric Bieniemy walk? Is that maybe what they preferred and all along, and to hand the reins to Matt Nagy as OC, even though that's not official?
I don't know if I could say it was preferred. I don't think that was necessarily, you know, their, I think it was more of their expectation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that is why, you know, hey, Matt Nagy coming to Kansas City made perfect sense because, you know, to Andy Reid's point of view, you know, it's been a mystery about why Eric Bieniemy hasn't been hired. And his expectation was that, you know, certainly, I mean, and that's one of the reasons why he had been continuing to work under one-year deals, was because the Chiefs, for the most part, figured that he was going to be gone. I mean, that they figured at any point in the last couple of seasons that he was going to be given a head coaching opportunity. So, you know, Matt Nagy coming in was really just a safeguard for the inevitable that they figured it was eventually going to happen, that he would be gone. And I think that you probably make a good point because I, at least from, you know, the public speculation, and maybe the Chiefs had this calculation as well, which was that if, you know, EB doesn't get a head coaching job this year, maybe he does go ahead and choose to leave for either one, a college job, or two, an offensive coordinator position where he has more power, more money, more voice. And so that certainly could have been part of the calculation with bringing in Nagy and having him be there and everything. You know, and part of it too was, you know, he's a great fit in that room. I mean, he's been a great fit before. He's an important voice. I mean, they really wanted to, you know, they think he's a great coach and want him to be a part of things. But you hit on the interesting point too, which is that, you know, hey, Matt Nagy didn't have to jump through all these hoops to get his head coaching job in Chicago. Eric Bieniemy is being asked to do things that other guys haven't done. And certainly, hey, some of it is that he is maybe just not in vogue with what NFL teams want. They want the 30, 40-something offensive wunderkinds who do things differently. And Eric Bieniemy he's, you know, early 50s. He's more of an old-school football coach. I think he fits more in that line. So maybe he's just out of – maybe NFL owners view him a little bit of out of step with what's vogue these days. But at the same time, I think that's why there's 8 teams in the NFL that don't have any idea what they're doing. Eric Bieniemy is a quality football coach, and his results show. So I don't get why he hasn't gotten the opportunity, because I think he's absolutely deserved it.
Well, we'll see if he'll get it eventually now that he's the OC at Washington, and certainly wish him the best of luck. Is it inevitable that officially it'll be Matt Nagy as the offensive coordinator? And if so, then who do the Chiefs look at to replace Matt's position in regards to quarterback's coach?
Yeah, and it'd be interesting, too, to see if there's anybody who chooses to go with EB to Washington. You know, typically, there's not usually a lot of turnover. You know, it's always been said that Andy's always, you know, told his coaches, hey, you can go anywhere you want to, but you can't take anybody with you. So there's been exceptions to that. So let's see if anybody does go with EB. But, yeah, I mean, there will be some interviews. They obviously have to interview an external minority candidate for the Rooney Rule. So there will probably be some names bantered about. And I wouldn't expect, unless they get those interviews done quickly, that they make the elevations with Matt, you know, soon. I mean, it'll probably take longer than you expect. But, yeah, I mean, I do think that Matt Nagy will become the offensive coordinator. It will be interesting to see if they just make him OC and he doesn't keep the quarterback's coach title anymore. If he doesn't, Dave Girardi, the assistant quarterback's coach, I think is the most likely candidate to move up. They've even got some, you know, internal candidates to be an assistant quarterbacks coach. I mean, they've got some guys that deserve some promotion. Porter Ellett is in that group. I wouldn't be surprised if he got promoted up to maybe an assistant coach level. They've got some room to move some guys in, and I wouldn't be surprised too if, you know, they saw this as an opportunity to bring in some fresh blood and brought in somebody in from the outside at one of the assistant levels.
All right, off-season moves in regards to personnel on the field. What's the most pressing issue or issues that you're looking at that the Chiefs have to deal with?
Well, I mean, number one is going to be Orlando Brown. I mean, that's the one I think that you got to deal with the most. You know, today starts the day where you can tag franchise players. The Chiefs have until March 7th. I can't imagine a scenario where Orlando Brown doesn't get tagged. And all that does really is just extend the negotiating window. I mean, they'll then have until, you know, this or, you know, later in the spring to get a deal done. We've seen, obviously, it can go all the way into the summer and go to training camp as far as getting an extension done too. But I don't think there's going to be any quick resolution with that, but that will be the most pressing thing. The other item that I think is below the radar a little bit because he is under contract is Chris Jones.
Yep.
You know, this was never really intended to be a contract year that Chris Jones played under. The expectation was that, hey, if you wanted to keep Chris Jones, you're going to rework that deal, or, you know, you're going to let him walk. I mean, this he's got, like, I think, a $28 million cap number for next year. He's only due $19 million in cash, though. And after the season that Chris Jones just had, I mean, now, you know, the Chiefs could actually say, well, you know what, this deal's actually pretty favorable. We might want Chris to play under this contract. But that doesn't mean Chris wants to play under this deal, because now it's not a great deal for him. So we could certainly be in the same kind of situation that we were with Tyreek Hill last year, in that, you know, Chris and his camp will want to rework that deal. The Chiefs probably don't. Can they get it done? I mean, at this point, both sides, I mean, Chris has been pretty clear he wants to stay in Kansas City. The Chiefs have been the same way. They want to keep him. But he's getting close to 30, and now you're getting to that point where you've got to make a decision about whether or not you're going to pay him long term. And so I think that will be the tricky one that pops up. I mean, it certainly would not surprise me if, you know, we had a similar situation to Tyreek. Remember last year, it was really in a 3-hour period that we went from thinking, yeah, Tyreek was going to be getting an extension in Kansas City to going to Miami. I mean, could something like that happen to Jones this offseason and next month? I can't rule it out. I mean, it's certainly one of the possible outcomes. And the Chiefs have a lot of other decisions to make, and too. I mean, they've got Andrew Wiley's a free agent at right tackle. They're, you know, going to have to make a decision there. Juan Thornhill, Colin Saunders. I mean, and Mecole Hardman. They've got a lot of free agents at different places. My general rule is that, hey, the Chiefs' philosophy and Brett Beach's philosophy is that if they don't sign their free agents after year three, they usually let them walk or test the market. And if they come back, it's usually on a 1-year deal.
Yep.
So for all those guys who fit in that category, that's what I would expect. I mean, I think the Chiefs will let them test the market. If there's nothing out there they can find, they may come back, but I don't think it'll be on a long-term deal.
You mentioned that long-term deals and these big contracts can really hurt a team, especially the cap number with your quarterback, who's now in his big contract, Patrick Mahomes. If you're general manager, I make Matt Derrick the general manager here. Am I going to avoid giving Orlando Brown a long-term deal and just try to get him to go under the tag for a second straight year? Because I think it's a mistake to give Orlando Brown top three or top four tackle money. That's my opinion. And then, as you said, Chris Jones is 30. And I guess, what's your priority there? I mean, if you got to choose one, which one are you going with?
Yeah, and that's a great question because, I mean, it's gonna be increasingly difficult to pay both those kind of guys.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to pay a top-flight left tackle and top-flight edge or pass rusher, even if it's an interior guy, I mean, those are just – it's going to probably be an either-or situation at some point in the future. I'm with you in that, yeah, I think it's really hard to justify at this point making Orlando a top-three left tackle in the league as far as money goes. That's certainly last year the indication was what he wanted. It didn't seem like the two sides were terribly close on a deal. I don't think Orlando has necessarily budged on that. So I my expectation is that he still wants to be paid top left tackle money. If that's the case, I don't know that that's in the Chiefs budget. So I would expect this to extend. I mean, does that mean that Orlando might not be back next year? It's possible. I still think he is the left tackle more likely than not, but there will be some drama there. And Chris is a great example. I mean, based on, certainly the Andy Reid philosophy when he was in Philadelphia, and the Chiefs have operated a little bit differently, but as great as Chris has been, and as certainly as great of a player in that locker room and a source of that resource that guy has been, it's really hard to make that commitment. So, I mean, I would not be surprised if the Chiefs were like either, hey, Chris, play under this last year's deal and let's talk next year, or if Chris really wants a long-term deal right now, I don't know if it's in Kansas City.
And one guy we did leave out that is somewhat popular, and that's Juju Smith-Schuster. What do you think the chances are he's back?
I think the chances are pretty high.
Yeah.
You saw the injuries even pop up this year. That was a reason why there were some teams that weren't interested in the last couple of off seasons for him. That hasn't been a concern for the Chiefs. They really like him. He's been a strong influence in that locker room too. It seems like there's a lot of interest from both sides to get a deal done. I think it will. I mean, certainly some team could come out there and blow Juju away with an offer. Maybe he can't refuse. But I'd say my chances of, I think, Juju staying are like 80%.
Okay. Time for an off-the-wall question from Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest. Patrick Mahomes now, he joked about the other day, he's been to Disney World and now Disneyland. So what's the best or worst amusement ride that you've ever been on, Matthew?
I will say the one that my friends back in Springfield, Missouri, are all just devastated over closing, Fire in the Hole at Silver Dollar City. Last year for this one in 23, they're closing it, and I just never cared for Fire in the Hole.
What's Fire in the Hole? Describe it for me. I don't know what it is.
It's basically a roller coaster through, like, I think it's a town. I mean, I haven't ridden the ride in 30 years.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it's basically through, like, a little town in a mine that is caught on fire.
Okay.
And it's got a 1930s Ozark, maybe 1800s Ozark, I guess.
Okay.
Kind of feel to it and everything. There's like a, I don't know, I mean, it's like a 20-foot drop.
Okay.
I mean, there's no real roller coaster to it. I mean, it's like, like 3 minutes long and it doesn't go very fast. I don't know why people like it. It's so boring.
You're wasting your money is what you're telling me.
Well, once you buy the ticket, it's free.
Yeah, sure. Something like that.
The cost of standing in line.
That's true. That's the thing. If you're going to stand in line for a long, long time, that ride better last a while or it better be one heck of a ride for the amount of time it does last, right?
Hey, I rode the Millennium Falcon ride at, Disneyland in the Star Wars land. So that was pretty freaking cool.
Sounds cool. Hey, man, we appreciate the time. And let everybody know how they can read your work and follow you on social media.
You can go to chiefsdigest.com. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Derrick, M-A-T-T-D-E-R-R-I-C-K, just like Derek Thomas and Derek Naughty.
Nice.
And you can find Chiefs Digest on Facebook as well.
Always a pleasure having you on, and I'm glad we're talking about such great things as a Super Bowl championship, and perhaps we'll talk to you after the draft and see what the Chiefs do with those 12 picks. Thanks for the time, as always, Matt.
Absolutely, Wade. It was great catching up with you.